players gather to cast powerful spells, some of the oldest and most powerful in the history of Magic the Gathering. Troll of Khazad-dûm, Atraxa, Grand Unifier, Archon of Cruelty, and many others. Battling head-to-head in brutal combat, they have one thing in common: to uphold their legacy and the search for eternal glory.
The Eternal Glory podcast is brought to you by the minds behind Bosh and Roll on YouTube, Thraben University, and TheEpicStorm.com. This episode is sponsored by 3-for-1 Trading and Sparks Law Practice.
Hello, and welcome to episode 119 of the Eternal Glory podcast. Enjoy the stability. We've already recorded 30 minutes of introductions and banter for the week. Wait, actually, I think it was 42 minutes. We got a little fired up in this pre-show. It is available in our supporter-exclusive pre-show. Check out patreon.com/eternalglory to gain access or join as a YouTube member for the same content on YouTube instead. As always, I'm Phil Gallagher, a.k.a. Thraben U.
I am Brian Koval, a.k.a. Bosh and Roll.
And I am Brian Cook of The Epic Storm. And let me tell you, there's some hot rants in this pre-show, so you're going to want to sign up. And Brian's going to tell you some people that can listen to this pre-show, just like you can soon.
Shout out to our new members. We've got Kamari B, Dan M, Daniel P, Jennison, Drummer Boy No, Andrew S, and Head Lich in Charge. Great name, by the way. They have been subbed to my Patreon in the past, and I'll never forget that name. One of the best usernames I've known. Head Lich in Charge, shout out.
Also shout out to our sponsors, Sparks Law, a business transactional law firm owned by Eternal Magic community member Jonathan Sparks. If you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or gig worker looking to start your own company, Sparks Law can help with partnership agreements, contract reviews, intellectual property protection, or any other business legal questions. If you want to shape your business strategy with a fellow Eternal gamer, reach out via email to jsparks, that's J-S-P-A-R-K-S, at sparkslawpractice.com, or call 470-268-5234. This episode is also sponsored by 3-for-1 Trading, one of Europe's leading Magic the Gathering traders. Their online shop has a fantastic selection of high-end Magic cards, especially for vintage, legacy, and old-school players. You can find them at shop.3foronetrading.com or visit their booth at major events. They run weekly sales, and new, individually scanned high-end cards are added every Wednesday. Use code ETERNALGLORY to get our community-exclusive offer of free worldwide shipping on your first order of $500 and experience their world-class customer service and exact grading for yourself.
And if you want to advertise to over 10,000 Eternal gamers every episode, reach out. We're always accepting new sponsors.
Legacy, right now, is stable. It's calm. Glassy blue waters in every direction, all the way to the horizon. We should talk about that because it's been a long time since that's been true. No cards have been banned from Legacy for a full year. March 2023 was the last ban list update when White Plume Adventure and Expressive Iteration got the axe. No new printings have shaken up the metagame for 6 months now. Up the Beanstalk and Beseech the Mirror came out in September. That was Rise of the Eldrazi. Not right. Wilds of Eldraine, that's the set. And gameplay is pretty balanced. There are no serious calls for bans coming from anywhere, from among people who play a lot of Legacy and, you know, really understand how things move. If there are conversations, usually Bowmasters is the one that's mentioned. Grief is getting kind of some heat on it in multiple formats. But still, comparing those to like White Plume Adventurer or Ragavan or Dreadhorde Arcanist, some of our recent things that we've had to live with for a long time, it's calm out there. Calm, smooth seas.
So I think something about right now is that when you hear someone talk about bans, it's usually, I don't like playing against this thing. I don't like this play pattern. I don't like that this thing beats my deck. Rather than, the format is completely fucked. Like, the format is ruined. It has just, like, warped everything around it. It is so incredibly tough to beat. most of the band conversations right now aren't the serious, like, wizards, please help us, the format's ruined. There's very few people right now running around, like, with that attitude.
If anything, I've heard the complaint that the format is boring or solved, which I think is actually really funny. If you look at how the metagame's moved over the last few weeks, we're in what I would consider to be a perfect metagame because it's cylindrical. Right now, the blue-black reanimator or Riskaminator deck is at the top. A month ago, it was Ancient Tomb Strategies. Somewhere in the middle, it was a bunch of, you know, up the beanstalk decks, and we're seeing the format shift from week to week or every couple weeks at least, and that's exactly what you want out of a healthy metagame.
Yeah, if you are a tuner, not a brewer, but a tuner, like someone who is good at adjusting their lists, reading the metagame, kind of thinking about where things are going to be going, like, this is an awesome time for you. Like, there is a lot of small benefit that is going to add up over time if you have your fingers on the pulse of the format.
Yeah, this metagame reminds me of the years where Jerry Thompson just dominated the Star City circuit during the Callblade standard era. No deck was better than Callblade. It was one of the best standard decks in the history of Magic, and the mirror match was pretty close to chess, which is not always true about the best deck in a format. Like, the best player on the best deck would frequently win. And a player like Jerry Thompson would innovate every week. He would splash red this week to beat last week's version of Callblade. He would splash black into his Callblade to beat the red deck that he pioneered the week before. He'd go back to blue-white when the splash colors were all too out there and exploitable. And he just collected trophy after trophy after trophy with minor adjustments to a solved metagame. And this is a great time to be a builder like that, or to leverage those skills, or to learn those skills if you've never experienced this before.
Yeah, we're watching a lot of people try out new things. I think the Surveil lands are being taken a lot more seriously than they were a few weeks ago. And I'm seeing more and more of those pop up in decks that I necessarily wouldn't have expected it. And if you feel like you have the time in the metagame for that to work, because, you know, people are, you know, trying to set up Miracling Triumph of St. Catherine or setting up Beans or whatever, like, there's a ton of benefit there.
Yeah, I'm going to do a little history lesson here, because even in times where the Legacy metagame didn't shake up much, some of those times we were waiting for something to get banned. I'm just going to do, starting in 2018, Deathrite Shaman and Gitaxian Probe got banned. Deathrite Shaman was legal for 6 years and Gitaxian Probe for 7. Preposterous numbers on those. That shit was just allowed for a long time. Renin 6, banned in November 2019, was legal for 5 months. So that's not that bad in the terms of Legacy's big scope. Underworld Breach lasted 6 weeks in 2020. Get out of here with that.
Way too long.
Risky. The next one, actually, Lurrus and Zerda, banned after a month. Get out of here. So, in 2020, Wizards was on the ball at Legacy. Shout out to them. But then we get back to February 2021. Arkham's Astrolabe, Oko Thief of Crowns, and Dreadhorde Arcanist were all banned at the same time. All three of those, they came out in subsequent sets, so it's like 1.25 to 1.75 years they were all legal. A year and a half on average, especially Oko and Dreadhorde Arcanist. Like, Astrolabe is kind of under the radar, and it broke the game in ways that weren't quite so obvious, but Oko and Arcanist, holy smokes. We played with those for a year and a half.
I remember. I still have my trauma.
Death and Taxes players could not leave their homes during that entire year and a half.
That was one, like, I remember that year and a half so vividly because I was just so miserable playing every deck that I enjoyed. And I have, generally speaking, appreciated the faster action that we have gotten on some stuff since then.
I remember thinking at one point, it's taken this long, they're not going to do it. And I sort of just, like, told myself I'd have to get over it, because if they were going to do it, they wouldn't have waited this long.
And that's exactly the feeling that I want to juxtapose the current Legacy feeling against. Because a year and a half into Oko and Dreadhorde Arcanist, we were all just kind of like, yeah, this is Legacy now. These are the rules of engagement. Kind of sucks, but we'll make it work because we love Legacy. And I know there are people big mad about Orcish Bowmaster, and I think those people are wrong. I think that people who play a ton of Legacy, and, you know, like the three of us who play it literally as our jobs, Bowmaster does not feel like Dreadhorde Arcanist. We are not just waiting for a ban. Yeah, we are not sitting here waiting for a ban. We're not begging Wizards to do anything here because it's chill. That calmness versus just the misery of, like, you know, going back to the ocean metaphor. It's like we're on calm seas now in our little pirate boat. And during those times, we were like boating through the Arctic and we just had to put ice cutters on the front of our boat to make it work and get anywhere. And it was slow going and it sucked, but we adapted because we had to, but we'd rather be in any other climate. Well, we're just floating around the equator now. It's beautiful. And this is like the perfect spot to compare February 2021 and the 1.5 years before that to now and how different they really are.
But I'm pretty sure there was a set that was released in the middle there. Modern Horizons 2, Brian?
Yes, I've heard of that one. Ragavan was legal for 6 months, and that felt like a long time for Ragavan. I'm not going to lie. I'll take some accountability. When we reviewed Modern Horizons 2, we were super hype on Dragon's Rage Channeler, and we thought Ragavan was worse than that. And we were just like, I don't know. How good is hitting with this, really? How reliable is a 2-1 body to get through? And, you know, we were wrong. Quickly revealed. We can own that. But yeah, Ragavan felt like it could have gone after 2 months, and even that 4 months was like, Wizards, please. That's that feeling again.
Exactly. I will say that we were right, though, about Channeler also being cracked. We just didn't understand that Ragavan was even better.
Correct. And then the last ban that we got, mentioned this at the top of the episode, was 1 year ago, March 2023. Expressive Iteration was banned after being legal for 2 years. It wasn't cracked that whole time because it was kind of being held back by other stuff. But I feel like the last 6 to 8 months of those 2 years, we were like, come on now, this is dig through time. We figured out it was dig through time, another banned card, and we could stop. White Plume Adventurer actually got axed pretty quick. It was legal for 6 months and it was on Magic Online for 4 months. So that was a pretty quick turnaround. It was, you know, if we count Magic Online as the real world, this thing was legal for less time than Ragavan was, and less time than Ren and Six was. They really axed this thing once we had data for it. But Expressive Iteration was another one of those two-year stretches where it's like, come the hell on. We can stop with this now.
So you mentioned Orcish Bowmasters in the middle there, and it reminded me of something that I see pretty regularly in my Twitter feed. If you follow Ari Lax from the Dominaria podcast, people often tweet at Ari about banning Orcish Bowmasters in Modern, and Ari's response fairly often is, you want to ban Raise the Alarm? And it just makes people feel so foolish for wanting to ban Orcish Bowmasters. And that's what I hear every single time whenever it comes up in conversation. I'm just like, yeah, Raise the Alarm is so good. So I think, obviously, it's not quite Raise the Alarm. It is obviously better. You know, punishing blue decks is something that Legacy traditionally doesn't have. And a lot of people don't like that. Legacy is supposed to be the cantrip format. It's defined by what everyone knows and loves as the cantrip cartel. And cards being printed that punish the type of island ponder certs that our loving co-host, you know, plays, they don't like that just because blue traditionally doesn't have hosers, and now we're seeing that sort of thing and it's ruffling some feathers. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see more cards like this in the future. Spirit of the Labyrinth, Leovold, you know, those sort of things punish draws, but Orcish Bowmasters is just a new way of punishing draw steps that we're seeing.
Do you know what's refreshing? Black being playable in Legacy? Maybe prior to, like, Grief and Orcish Bowmasters and Troll of Khazad Dûm, where Black really got this, like, booster shot in the arm that powered it up, Black was, like, often a tertiary splash color. And, you know, if you were signing up to be the, like, fair Dark Ritual creature gamer, like, what were you doing? And now, like, Grief reanimate, Troll reanimate, Bowmasters plus Douthi Voidwalker, like, the last couple of years have brought Black back up to competitive in terms of power level.
My boy Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, was deeply disrespectful of all Black decks for many years until Black just got a big boost. Just the other day on my channel, we had this phenomenal feature of why Orcish Bowmaster is actually, I mean, it's annoying when you have Brainstorm and they have Bowmaster, or they're holding up two mana and you know they have Bowmaster and you just have to cast your Brainstorm. we had this awesome moment where I was playing some Grixis control deck versus some LED Echo of Eons deck. And my opponent cast a Ponder. I flashed in Bowmaster, ping you for one, Ponder draw, ping you for another one. And then they just went LED Echo of Eons as their last two cards in hand. They drew their seven. They took their seven, left me with a giant creature at play, then tendrils the shit out of me.
Been there?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And there wasn't even like a Veil of Summer to save them or anything. They were just like, yeah, I can afford this. Life total is a resource. And one of the things that I think people get upset about, the people who are unreasonably upset about Bowmaster, I think that in their head, it is Hull Breacher or Narset or Leovold, where you literally can't cast your spell. But yeah, you can. It just hurts. Life total is a resource. And it's a very different thing to be locked out by a Narset than it is to take some damage on your Ponder from a Bowmaster. Just it's different, and I think it's appropriate.
I think a lot of the people who are really anti Bowmasters are trying to continue to force something that is just not playable anymore. So, for example, let's say you liked to play Glimpse of Nature Elves. Bowmasters has ruined your deck. You have to change decks. Like, you have to go to a different build. You cannot play that in this metagame. And there are going to be some decks that just get, like, power crept out of the format as new printings happen. And you can pivot those into a playable deck without, you know, spending a gajillion dollars. But if you try to make the same thing happen without making... If you try to make the same thing good without making adjustments for the metagame, you know, no wonder you have, like, very strong feelings about Bowmasters.
Right. You already own Cradles. Just buy some Fiend Artisans. You're way more than halfway there. The hard part's done. You can pivot those decks. When Initiative was at full power with White Bloom Adventure, Merit Lage strategies were a joke. And they were doing stuff like adding Painter Servant to the lands package with Urza Saga, just so they had some Hail Mary chance to beat White Bloom Adventure. And no, that wasn't great, but also... life finds a way, or you just don't play Merit Lage for a while.
I think an elegant way to put it is, like, Bowmasters invalidates a small subsection of the format, whereas cards like Oko and Dreadhorde Arcanist and Ragavan and Luris and Underworld Breach invalidated, like, a third of the metagame or more. Like, you just physically could not compete with the card quality, and Bowmasters isn't that.
And generally, the great Dr. Richard Shea once said to me, if you think a card should be banned, you should be playing it. And I've really taken that to heart. I'm attending SCG Philly this weekend. I'm playing Team of Rhinos because I think Violent Outburst should be banned, or the Cascade rules changed in some fashion. Like, obviously, Modern is deeply sick right now, and I'm just going to play the deck I think should be banned. You literally can play decks that are good without Orcish Bowmaster in them. Initiatives near the top of the metagame, Team or Delver never went anywhere. Is it Delver? Lands, Goblins, Painter. The Rhino Cascade's also legal in Legacy and has pretty good meta share. Various Merit Lage Depths decks are back. Some of them play Bowmaster, some of them don't. Underworld Breach, where it's like, if you're not playing this, what are you even doing? It's very different than that.
So I guess this is our point where we pivot and we start talking about, like, what is new, despite the fact that we aren't having any sweeping changes here?
The answer to that is not much.
But wait, didn't we just get Warhammer 40K?
technically, and it's kind of mid.
Yeah, that was the joke. A lot of these cards, they seemed better in theory than practice.
Right, and the Legacy metagame actually hasn't changed much at all since Eternal Weekend, which was 4 months ago at this point. So here's a story. I mentioned this in the pre-show, but the main episode listeners haven't heard it yet. At MagicCon Chicago, I made the top 8 of the Legacy for Original Art tournament, and I won the Legacy Cup. It was something like 13-1 on the weekend in matches played. And my deck was my Eternal Weekend deck. From December 10th, I added a Pernicious Deed to the sideboard and made no other changes in 4 months. and I still think that deck is correct, and it's clearly still viable because I'm out here crushing with it. That's a long time to still be able to play the same deck when multiple sets were printed.
Yeah, in many ways, this feels like a much older Legacy format. You know, when I started playing Legacy, the idea was like, you buy a deck, you have it for life, you make minimal changes as new sets come out. And for a bit, you know, in the last 5 years or so, there have just been like violent metagame shifts since about the printing of like Modern Horizons 2 and on, where like Legacy has like warp, 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 warp. For the first time in a while, like, I kind of feel like we're good, and I kind of feel like we're back at like adding a card or two from every set to fringe playability rather than these like massive spikes of power.
The recent printings have been exactly in the pocket that I want printings to hit Legacy with. The things that are showing up from the last several sets, the last 6 months of sets, really, it's Molten Collapse, an upgraded removal spell for Grixis decks. Wail of the Forgotten, kind of a glorified Chain of Vapor for combo sideboards. And the Surveil Lands, which, you know, are high impact, but not White Plume Adventurer high impact. These are all cards that are seeing play. Like, something like Molten Collapse is very obvious in its application, and it goes into exactly the decks who can both descend and need to remove Chalice of the Void sometimes. Well, the Forgotten, it's kind of a special case for like blue-black reanimator decks or the Living End deck that was kicking around for a minute. And then Surveil Lands, we talked about them at length in our previous episode, how they're popping up as one or two ofs in various decks or spawning whole new archetypes like Witherbloom combo / reanimator Golgari stuff. Like, these are beautiful standard legal cards. They're legal and standard right now, every single one of them, that have just trickled through all the formats and landed in the hands of Legacy players, and they're nice little upgrades in spots where they're appropriate. Versus, here's Ragavan. Good luck, idiots.
And even some of the things that we kind of expected to be busted have settled relatively well. When everyone saw Beseech the Mirror, like, we kind of collectively lost our shit. You know, we thought Mono Black Helm was going to be everywhere. We thought this was going to slot into a lot of combo deck lists. And now I feel like Beseech is a good card that has a couple of homes. I feel like Beseech is like normal power level rather than this crazy format warping thing. Like, Bryant, how do you feel about it, like, in retrospect, you know, what, like 8 months down the line?
I mean, I love Beseech the Mirror. We're not going to do another episode where I talk about that, but it seems like it's a playable card in Storm Shells, and that's about it, which is exactly the power level that Legacy wants and needs.
Right, and Beseech the Mirror, when I saw that card spoiled, I even said on this podcast, like, I went from 0% to play Storm at Eternal Weekend to like 35-40%. Let's see what these lists look like in a couple weeks. Activated the Dark Ritual part of my brain, and I was like, oh man, here we go. If someone breaks it, I'm ready to pivot. I tried the Epic Storm, and that deck's really hard, so I didn't move forward, obviously. But I did play at Eternal Weekend, both of the Eternal Weekends I went to, in various shells, a card from the same set, Up the Beanstalk, which I think actually has had the biggest Legacy impact since Lord of the Rings. And I don't think that's really close or arguable. Is anyone going to argue with me over that?
Nope.
Yeah, banned in Modern and defining how control decks are built in Legacy. Up the Beanstalk turned out to be the biggest shaker of the last 6 months. And even that, it takes deck building. Like, you had to dust off your Leyline bindings from your Modern or Standard collection to start playing Up the Beanstalk. We're doing weird stuff like Triumph of St. Catherine, a card that I don't think is very good. If you watch the pre-show, there's an extended rant on that. Control decks are finishing with Murktide Regent now instead of Uro. That's an exploitable thing. Now you're soft to different kind of hate. Your creatures aren't as sticky. They don't generate value. It's real deck building to cash out an engine. And I think that's appropriate too. Like, these are great. Even the ones that really actually did shift what Legacy is about in terms of Out the Beanstalk and Beseech the Mirror switched what Storm decks are about, they're still appropriate trickle down into Legacy kind of cards.
And I think a similar thing that happened with Beseech also happened with the One Ring, where when the One Ring was printed, everyone zeroed in on that card relatively quickly after seeing it in play as like, this is something that's busted. and we saw it like slotting into aggro decks for a little while. We saw it slotting into control decks as their primary form of card advantage. And now that we're, you know, what, 8 months down the line, 10 months down the line from that, whatever it is, we see the One Ring settling largely in one deck, like the like Mystic Forge style One Ring combo deck with a bunch of keys to untap it. And otherwise, it's relatively rare to see the One Ring.
Yeah, I did some homework over the weekend because I'm preparing for SCG Con, and I wanted to know how many One Ring decks are really out there, because it's a card that Storm decks struggle to beat. You have to play a dedicated card to win around the One Ring. So I did some homework, and it's somewhere between 2 and 4% of the field. And it's mostly just the Grim Monolith decks, as Phil mentioned, regardless of the flavor. You could be a blue one, you could be colorless, whatever. It's mostly those. And then some outliers like Two of and a Doomsday, or there's a newer Goblins list that has a couple in there. But for the most part, the One Ring is not very popular anymore. It's also very rarely played in control decks.
Yeah, the One Ring got kind of market corrected by Up the Beanstalk. That it's wild to think that this uncommon from a standard legal set market corrected the mythic chase rare of a straight to modern legal set. It's true. It's just more efficient, fits into more things. And let's zoom out on the One Ring a little bit and talk about Lord of the Rings in general, because we are talking about eras and changing of legacy. Orcish Bowmasters immediately changed legacy in a big way. We've talked about it quite a bit on the pod already. We're not going to go in again. Like, we know, anyone who is here knows, and who plays Legacy now knows, Orcish Bowmaster has changed a lot of play patterns and what we're worried about and sequencing and all sorts of stuff. That was an immediate shakeup of legacy, which in the context of this episode's topic, which is Legacy's not shaking right now, enjoy the calm. Bowmaster was a quick change. And then the land type cyclers, most notably Lorien Revealed and Troll of Khazad-dûm, they took a little longer to catch on, but they're very clearly staples right now. Speaking of which, I was placing an order for SCG Philly with a vendor that I like for on-site pickup. Lorien Revealed is in my legacy deck and my modern deck for the weekend, and I figured I'd just throw a couple in my cart so I didn't have to move cards around. It's just a common, right? $8 American was what this vendor had Lorien Revealed in their inventory at, and I was like, okay, I'll just move them between decks. I'm not paying $16 out of convenience.
BRB, like writing a note to like pull those out of my bulk.
Yes, they are not bulk. I think on TCG they're probably closer to like $4 or something, but you know, you order from people you like. But I wasn't gonna spend $4 either on them out of fairness to this vendor. But yeah, big money for these commons, and that's because they have affected all formats they're legal in. And those are the paradigm shifters from the last whole year. Once again, point to that full year since a ban. Expressive Iteration, White Bloom Adventure banned in March. Lord of the Rings came out in June. That was a shakeup. Wilds of Eldraine came out in September. That shifted a few things. And we have been stable and chilling since. Modern Horizons 2 came out June 2021, close to 3 years ago at the time of this recording, which feels insane, but we have all just kind of acclimated to Fury and Solitude and Dothi Voidwalker and all of those aspects of our metagame now.
I would just like to note, this isn't in the notes, but War of the Spark was May 2019. In my mind, that is the start of the Fire era, and that's how long we've been in it. Half a decade at this point. That is a long time, and there's still people out there that are like, we should go back to pre-war, you know, erase Teferi and Karn. I mean, I wouldn't oppose the erasing Karn the Great Creator, but realistically, there's no going back. The can has been opened, worms are everywhere, and you kind of just have to adapt to the new world.
Also, it's just so funny to think about, because I remember when War of the Spark came out, I was a very early 4 Teferi, 4 Narset gamer, just put those right in my deck. That sort of tap out blue-white control made me very happy at the time. It still does. Narset barely in decks anymore, like maybe a sideboard card for Bean Mirrors or in dedicated decks that are trying to Wheel of Fortune somehow with a Narset out. Teferi, between 0 and 2 copies in control decks. I'm on kind of zero side myself. These aren't even things we talk about anymore.
Karn the Great Creator, like, I'm embarrassed to play that card. Like, every time I play a deck that has that, I'm just like, yeah, this card sucks. But, you know, it is in this deck for X, Y, and Z specific reason. There's just so much better things to be doing with Ancient Tombs right now.
Right, exactly. And how things change. Modern Horizons 1 also gave us, I don't know the date for that. I think it was 2019. I think it was 2 years before, too. Someone fact-checked
me. It was like
me.
A month after War of the Spark, I believe. I'll look it up.
Yeah, so that gave us like Force of Negation and Force of Vigor and stuff that could slow down some of the more aggressive stuff. And these are all just parts of the DNA now. Teferi, Force of Vigor, whatever.
Pretty good memory here. Modern Horizons 1 was June 2019, so 1 month.
Yeah, that makes sense because, yeah, okay. I don't need to explain my entire thought process here. It's irrelevant. But yeah, the stuff like, holy crap, we got to beat 8 Force of Wills now? Or how can I ever play a Blood Moon now for a Force of Vigor? You know, that sort of thing. That's all just settled into the Legacy DNA for those of us who have been doing this for 15, 20 years. Those of you who are here for your second or third year, don't worry about it. Bowmaster is going to be part of the DNA. The Land Cycler is part of the DNA. We're chilling. These will all settle out.
Yeah, and sometimes things change, but like maybe it's for the better. Back when I first started being an Ancient Tomb gamer, you know, if you resolved the Chalice of the Void, there was just some percentage of the time where the game was over on the spot and your opponent has like 4 cards remaining in their deck that are relevant. When I think back to like old Rug Delver, if you resolved a Chalice in game 1, your opponent had no outs to it. And there were 4 Tarmogoyfs left that you had to deal with. Maybe there's something like 1 Young Pyromancer in there. And now, like, I don't expect to win the game after Chalice resolves. Like, that's just the start of it. Because there's so many pieces of interaction for that now. You know, your Force of Negations, your Force of Vigors, your Boseijus, your Leyline Bindings, your Teferis. The game has changed over the last few years. But I think our current play patterns are largely incredibly healthy and interactive and skill testing.
Right. And as far as healthy back and forth skill testing gameplay, even as an Ancient Tomb gamer, Phil, I don't think you can debate sticking Ancient Tomb, hoping it holds long enough to gain some momentum to stick some creature and then like maybe they're behind by the time they answer the Chalice is more interesting than Ancient Tomb GG.
Yeah, it is. And Ancient Tomb Lotus Petal White Plume Adventurer was just GG. It's very fun the first few times you do it as you steamroll people. But, you know, after that, you know, it just feels like, okay, I did the thing. My thing was just objectively more powerful than my opponent's thing. I'll take my trophy or my 4-1 and move on to the next league. I didn't find great joy in that after I had done it for a while.
I don't know if the two of you saw this tweet that happened during the week, but there was somebody, and I can't remember who it is, honestly, off the top of my head. They're like, when you look at the front page of MTG Goldfish, there's 1 of 3 decks. You're either playing Wasteland, Urza Saga, or Ancient Tomb, and they're like, isn't that problematic? Decks can't exist without playing those 3 cards anymore. And they just completely chose to not look at Doomsday as just like one of the decks in the middle of the picture. Also, Brian, I know that you're a fan of Wasteland in your control decks at the moment, but I'm sure that you've also played control decks within the last year that don't have Wasteland in them, or Ancient Tomb, or Urza Saga.
Yes, I certainly have, including the Bant Control, like Bant Miracles deck that comes out the day that this pod release that I think is actually pretty good. I talked about it a bit more in the pre-show. Patreon up. Join that thing. It's in there.
I think one of my favorite things about the current metagame is that if you ask what is the best X card deck, that question is surprisingly difficult to answer and often changes from week to week. Like, what is the best Ancient Tomb deck? What is the best Up the Beanstalk deck? You know, I think those things are not static for a prolonged period of time. Like, when White Plume was legal, like, you know what the best Ancient Tomb deck was. When Oko and Uro like were legal at the same time alongside each other, like you knew what you were supposed to be doing as a control gamer. Like the signs were there, and now I feel like we have a cyclical, healthy metagame with small innovations every week or two.
Yep, agreed. And I just want to give a quick shout. You mentioned Boseiju. That Kamigawa Neon Dynasty came out in early 2022. Like, that, I didn't go that far in the history lesson, but another great set with just some trickle into Legacy, like Baseju, Odawara, Hidetsugu Consumes All, had a moment and still is seen in some sideboards. Like, that was another great design set for Legacy. Though I do wish Baseju costs 2 and a green instead of 1 and a green to channel. That seems like a little free to me. I'm not going to lie, but I'll leave it alone. Great set. Great contributions to Legacy.
And there were also bit players in that set that were like interesting for a while. Moon Circuit Hacker saw a little bit of play. We saw like a temporary resurgence of ninjas for a little while. And that card is still having impact in other formats. You know, the metagame changes. We got Bowmasters. Having an X1 around doesn't make as much sense anymore. Yada, yada, yada.
So that was a fun history lesson. We talked about tuning for a stable metagame and the Jerry Thompson effect, adding a color to your Cobblade deck every week to beat your deck from last week. And I want to shout out the emergence of Dimir Rescaminator, the Scam Reanimator hybrid that did not exist 3 weeks ago and is now the number one deck on Goldfish by a lot. It's 15.1% of the metagame. The next highest deck is 10.2. Just massive appearance of this Reanimator Scam hybrid deck, which some people were doing it, but they were in the space of trying to make it happen out of traditional speed-based red-black Reanimator. Calling out this list real quick, it has one Surveil land in the main and then 3 Wail of the Forgotten in the sideboard. Those are the only cards that are new, and every other card in the deck has been legal for the 9 or 10 months since Lord of the Rings came out. All of these cards have been here the whole damn time, and this deck was just found or just became good enough. That's not something that really happens if we're getting a ban level or White Plume Adventurer level bomb dropped on the format every 3 months. Nothing has changed in 9 months, and here's this deck all of a sudden. And it's the number one deck.
I would like to call out a couple different things about this deck list. The first, Brian, when you think classic blue-black Reanimator, is there a one-mana blue card that comes to mind?
Careful study.
Yeah, nowhere to be found in this deck list. When I think of the classic Reanimator decks from, you know, the 2010s, Careful Study was one of the first cards that saw play. There's zero copies of it here. How this deck gets creatures to the graveyard is exactly in Tomb, cycling, or evoking. That's it. I guess in theory you could go to draw step and discard, but that's not really what this deck is looking to do. It's playing a much fairer game plan. And even like to elaborate on that, they're playing Wastelands themselves. The deck that wants to reanimate Atraxa, Phil, have your flowers, is also playing Wasteland. And it's because it is a tempo deck that has a small Reanimator package. That is truly what it is. And I think part of the reason that this deck is so successful is people on Magic Online are still looking at this deck as if it's just blue-black Reanimator. It sort of is, but it's also just a very efficient tempo deck. So when you're boarding in your copies of Leyline of the Void, how efficient are they really? Especially if your opponent is just boarding in Dothi Voidwalkers and boarding out the actual Reanimator part of the deck, which makes this deck very scary because it is sort of Reanimator, but also it doesn't need to be. So those ley lines are not that effective.
Yeah, I actually categorize this deck in my head as blue-black tempo scam that can also just jack you up if you get caught slipping. I don't even call this Reanimator, really. I think it's like, I don't know, maybe you're supposed to name it after the scariest thing. Like, on Goldfish it's just called Reanimator. And I guess if my friend just played against this person and we're passing each other on the way to our tables and he's like, yo, they're on Reanimator, I would rather know that that's a gear of the deck than, yo, they're on Scam, and then I just get reanimated. So I guess, like, maybe you're supposed to call out the scarier thing the deck does, but this deck has 3, maybe 7, if you want to argue for Entomb, like 7 slots of reanimation and then 53 slots of scam. And how are you supposed to play against that? How are you supposed to sideboard against that? This is just a really cool hybrid.
I think if anything, if I was looking to attack this deck, I would look at it like a Delver strategy that I might want a tiny bit of graveyard hate against. So I wouldn't want something like Leyline of the Void. I think something like Surgical could be okay, Fairy Macabre, something that can interrupt the grief portion of the deck. I understand that grief evokes, and then you can stack the triggers however you want. But I think boarding in Leyline of the Void against this sort of strategy is a little bit clown shoes. I think you're going to feel embarrassed when they're just like, okay, Orcish Bowmasters, Dothy, I'll hardcast grief, attack, attack.
The squeeze point is force of will versus spot removal. Because a lot of people who come to me, they're like, how do I play control decks? New patrons, new coaching clients, whatever. How do I sideboard in this matchup? And one of the cleanest heuristics I could give control players for sideboarding is the first thing you need to do is identify if this is a Force of Will matchup or a Swords to Plowshares matchup, because you rarely want both. And you could probably cut three or four of the one that this matchup's not about. But this is deeply, deeply a Swords to Plowshares matchup and probably a Force of Will matchup. So now where am I getting these sideboard slots to even bring in my, you know, three or four pieces of graveyard hate? It's a tight squeeze that they put you in.
Yeah, with regards to the Leyline, I think a lot of it depends on the number of slots you have. Like, a lot of times some of your cards are awkward and you do end up wanting to play the Leyline, because if you get double griefed early, you just don't have a real game versus the tempo aspect. Like, if you get double griefed and lose two removal spells, like, the deck might just run you over even if they don't do the reanimator thing. I've actually had more success, I think, playing Leylines than I do the, like, fairies and surgicals. I'm just often finding that, like, those get griefed and then the thing that they were going to do happens anyway.
Fair enough. So I would like to point out one thing from a combo player's perspective. When you look at classic reanimator lists, even before red-black reanimator became a thing, you would usually see Dark Ritual and Lotus Petal in these decks. Those cards are nowhere to be found. I just want to really drive the point home here that this blue-black and air quotes reanimator shell, it's not a classic combo deck. It truly is a tempo deck with a pivot.
And it is a game-ending pivot. It's not like you were expecting a row, but now I have Court of Cunning. You know, like, that's also a pivot. That's a juke based on stuff. But this is straight up like, if you blink for 1 second, Archon of Cruelty is in play. And if you Swords to Plowshares my Orcish Bowmaster on turn two, now Atrax is in play and you don't have that plow anymore. It's scary.
So something that was there a few weeks ago that isn't there as much now is when this deck was first emerging, I was still seeing like show and tells in it some portion of the time. And I think people have now realized that like you don't need that, because the tempo aspect of the deck is just so good that like that is the way you are usually getting your kills. You don't need to lean further into support for the big creatures.
And this sideboard is mapped beautifully. I mean, we're all just talking about one list, like whatever's on top of Goldfish at this moment, but the reanimation package, at least the dedicated stuff, is three monsters, four entombs. And then this sideboard has three Dothy, Voidwalker, two Murktide Regent, True Name Nemesis. This is very clearly a seven out, six in, now all my threats don't use the graveyard thing. This is a map to juke, like very intentional. Even if you bring in that Surgical Extraction and Unlicensed Hearse just to pay a little respect to the reanimation package, like Bryant was saying, they might not even have it. And now you have Unlicensed Hearse versus True Name Nemesis. Just cool deck. Do we have anything else we want to say about this? This was supposed to just be an example of tuning for a stable metagame, and then we did a full deck breakdown, which I think is fine. Anything else to say before we move on, dudes?
So why don't we talk about like the air quotes, the problems of Legacy right now? And what I mean by that is, if you are deck building, if you are doing your tuning, what is it that you really need to respect? You know, what are the big like four or five things that your deck needs to be able to beat or compete with or have in mind in order for your deck to be like viable and competitive?
Yeah, we've got Bowmasters, Beans, two Griefs on turn one, or a fast Game Ender. And that's kind of broadly something stupid out of an Ancient Tomb or something stupid out of a Dark Ritual. Those are basically the four things that Legacy players need to worry about right now. And those are different things. One deck isn't going to beat all those things all the time, but that's the sign of a healthy metagame. But those are the four pillars, and then there's flavors to the pillars.
And a lot of times, like, the Grief and Bowmaster stuff end up in the same place. So you're often thinking about one broad category of decks. Not always, but often. So, like, you have blue-green X control decks to think about. You have black, mostly tempo-oriented decks to think about. And then you have, like, Burr Mana Go Fast decks to think about.
I'm fairly sure it was a meme, but I saw a Twitter post from a lands expert, Ollie, and they said, like, why isn't Compost seeing more play? And at first I was like, oh, wow, that's actually quite brilliant if you're trying to beat the Reanimator deck. And then I realized it plays directly into Orcish Bowmasters. So that's a little caveat that you have there. But there are ways to beat black decks in Legacy. This isn't the first time that, you know, a black deck has been popular, but it's taken some adjustment. The decks are a lot more resilient now. They have better pivots. And beating Fair Blue has always been a little bit more difficult in Legacy. And this Reanimator deck is the closest in a long time that it's ever been to a Fair Blue deck. So I think that right now you just have to recognize what these decks are doing and be one step ahead. So if they're pivoting to a more fair game plan with True Name Nemesis, be the next level, be the person boarding in the answers to True Names and Murktide Regents and that sort of thing.
There's also some neat testing going on. I don't remember the name of this card. Do either of you remember the name of the red green fish a creature out of your deck and put it into play with haste card? So it's a red and a green mana. You do something like look at the top five, put a small creature into play. It gains haste until the end of turn.
Never heard of this in my life.
It's break something. One of you might find it while I'm talking.
I just found it. It's called Breakout. So for a red and a green, it's a sorcery from Murders at Karlov Manor, not Markov Manor, Karlov Manor. Look at the top six cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card among them. If that creature card has two mana value or less, you may put it onto the battlefield and it gains haste until end of turn. If you didn't put it onto the battlefield this way, put it in your hand and the rest on the bottom in a random order.
So I've started seeing people messing around with this in like a Jund shell, where they use it to like pull out Collector Oofs and Fiend Artisans and Bowmasters and Mawlocks. And I think this is porting an idea from Modern. I think maybe over the weekend this did well in some Modern event, and now people are messing around with it in Legacy. And I'll be kind of interested to see if this has any legs.
Yeah, I've never read that card in my life, where I'm learning about it in real time here on this pod. And yeah, seems like a cool thing to do. If you are dropping chonkers like Tarmogoyf or whatever into play, or like you said, hate pieces like Collector Oof in a card selection manner that does not draw cards into a Bowmaster, worth exploring. Innovating in a solved metagame, or a stable metagame, not solved. Yeah, let me read this. We're going to close the episode with a conversation about one of these sets. In April, Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Reminder, it's March when we're recording this, if you're finding this later, but Outlaws of Thunder Junction coming out next month. I'm going to skip the June release for now, because that's how we're going to close the episode. July, Assassin's Creed, Universes Beyond. Anything could be in that. August, Bloomburrow, standard legal set. Quarter 3, Duskmourne, House of Horror, which is a standard legal set as well. And that's as far as we know. And June, that is 3 months from right now. Dun, dun, dun. Modern Horizons 3. Yeah. All of you out here talking about the boring metagame and how nothing moves and it's all solved, I don't want to hear a damn word out of any of your mouths when we get another cycle of pitch elementals or another two mana planeswalker or some horse hockey out of Modern Horizons 3 that we're all mad about for a year. I don't know. Let's talk about this. Both Modern Horizons pasts historically have permanently shaken up Legacy. MH1, we had the new pitch cards, the new forces. Prismatic Ending. I forgot what was even in that set at this point. Ren and Six came out of that set. It's banned now, but that shook things up. Hogak still gets played in some fringe stuff. That was MH1. Like as we talked about before, the forces and Prismatic Ending, straight up Legacy staples to this day. Modern Horizons 2, Murktide Regent. I've seen that card around once or twice recently. Ragavan got banned, of course. A lot of stuff from MH2. MH3. They've done it twice now. Are they going to chill, or are they going to shatter these formats open again? And what is the balance that we can expect from Wizards of the Coast? And I don't know the answer to this. What I am sure of is that they designed these sets for Modern, and a card like Ragavan, which is actually perfect in Modern, is banned in Legacy. And we might have to endure 6 months of this card that's great for Modern existing in our ecosystem. I don't know. We should expect some shakeups. And I don't know if they're going to keep giving us free reactive spells because, Jesus, we have enough of those. Both of the Modern Horizon sets gave us a cycle of pitch spells that are nutso. What do you guys expect out of this? And what are you going to do about it if it's crazy?
We do know what one of the pitch, I'm saying pitch here, spells looks like. We have Flare of Cultivation, one green-green, a 3-mana sorcery. You may sacrifice a non-token green creature rather than pay the spell's mana cost. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, reveal those cards, put one of them onto the battlefield tapped and the other to your hand. So if you're familiar with Kadama's Reach or Cultivate, this is a Cultivate that you can play for free by sacrificing a green creature. The initial conversation around this card has been, well, what if I fetch for Dryad Arbor? Or what if I Green Sun Zenith for Dryad Arbor? So then you're sacrificing your Dryad Arbor to put this spell in the stack that can be countered. And then you're going to cast a Cultivate or Kadama's Reach for free. So that means that your deck is playing basic lands. This seems like one of the most fair free spells that Wizards of the Coast could have possibly created. Like, I guess if you're a veteran explorer enthusiast, now is finally your time. You've been saying for years, every set that they create a 6-mana creature, ooh, this is a Nykvet playable. They actually made one. This is for you.
Yeah, a sac outlet for veteran explorer that also ramps basics seems perfect for veteran explorer gamers, but I mean, we'll see if that is a cycle, if what the rest of the cycle looks like, if sac inappropriately colored permanent is the gate on the free spell cycle, and the effects we're getting are like Cultivate or Boomerang instead of Force of Will or Pyrokinesis. And also importantly, if you just cast that card for 3 mana, it's just Cultivate.
It's actually more expensive. It's harder to cast. It's green.
Yeah, it's harder to cast Cultivate versus like Grief or Fury, where when you get to hard cast, you actually get a sizable relevant combat body in addition to it. Like that sort of thing matters. So we'll see. I'm not a game designer and I don't pretend to be. So I just see the cards with everyone else as they come. I think we should expect some kind of pushed thing that is appropriate for Modern, might be appropriate for Legacy, might break Legacy. I don't know, but I am not complaining about the stable metagame where I've been playing the same deck for 4 months right now.
Yeah, Legacy is fantastic right now, but I would like to call out one reprint that I know is going to make our co-host Phil very happy. Laelia the Blade Reforged will be entering Modern, and Phil loves that card. So Phil, congratulations.
Card sweet. Red aggro creatures go burr.
Yeah, red aggro card draw, nonsense, powerful stuff. Also, I saw Priest of Titania is entering Modern. None of the reprints affect Legacy players, obviously. We already have access to all the cards. The new cards are the ones we'll be keeping our eye on. And remember this moment, remember this podcast 3 months from now when you are deeply distressed about the shaken up metagame with new cards. And remember the calm that we had for a while.